It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Ethan Lane. Ethan is Executive Director for the Public Lands Council and NCBA Federal Lands, Washington, D.C. Great to see you.
Always great to see you, Tony.
So earlier today, horns honking, sirens, that's normal for Washington, D.C., but actually a celebration in the Capitol for the Capitol.
You know, we actually managed to get a win around here in Washington, D.C. Yes, it was on the ice with our hockey team, but we will take it where we can get it. Hopefully it bodes well for our Washington Nationals, and maybe this is the year we get past the first round of the playoffs.
So when we talk about wins, what about wins in your neck of the woods? And we're talking now, usually we talk the Endangered Species Act, ESA. What are we seeing?
Well, you know, I mean, my end of the world for our industry is kind of the Department of Interior and the resource end of the business. And that definitely means the Endangered Species Act, particularly with this administration and as they sort of work through that effort to remove regulations that are harming industry across the landscape, and particularly zeroing in on those regulations that are making it harder to manage the land properly. And no one does that better than our industry does. Ranchers put more conservation benefit on the ground than everybody else combined at the end of the day. That's part of what they do day in and day out. So making sure the Endangered Species Act works properly, making sure that it's not being used as a weapon by the environmental community or others, not used as a leverage point for litigation, fundraising, or anything else, is kind of chief among our concerns working with this new Department of Interior with Secretary Zinke and his team. So that's taking a few different forms. You know, obviously, going back to the Obama administration, NCBA and PLC have made a strong commitment to the Western Governors Association's ESA initiative. That was Governor Meade from Wyoming during his leadership. And, you know, that was an interesting effort because it really brought in stakeholders from across the spectrum. And that means a lot of people that we don't necessarily see eye to eye with. You know, some people that I would dare to call adversaries, and some others that are, you know, contentious from time to time. And then a lot of friends and allies as well. Oil and gas industry, mining, counties, state government, state wildlife folks, WAFWA, people like that, all at the table. And, you know, the result of 2 years of meetings all over the West was a set of recommendations that the governors voted on and sent to Congress, all but one endorsed bipartisan, Governor Brown from California being the only person that didn't approve that, which will come as not much of a shock to most of your listeners, I would assume. And those recommendations have now been sitting in Congress for about a year. And during that time, Senator Barrasso and the chairman of the Environment and Public Works Committee in the Senate and his team have been trying to figure out if they can craft some legislation or some kind of a path forward to modernize the Endangered Species Act based on this broad bipartisan support that we've built through the Western governors. We're hopeful that we're close to seeing something out of that process that will bear fruit. You know, I talk about this a lot. If we were going to sit in a room and fix ESA as an industry, even if we were going to fix it with some other industries, it would look radically different than what a compromise is going to look like. But, you know, what we need out of this process is probably a little different than what some other industries need. We need a reliable process. We need to make sure that decisions are being made based on science, not on litigation pressure. Right now, there's no mistaking the fact that most real decision-making at Fish and Wildlife is based on, gosh, we're going to get sued. We've already been sued. We don't want to get sued again. Lesser prairie chicken is a fantastic example of that. You know, we saw the listing, the warranted listing for threatened back in 2015. Judge Janelle overturned that decision in federal court in Midland based on some very good good arguments on behalf of some of the counties that were impacted, as well as industry, that, you know, hey, if you're going to have a conservation plan, you got to make sure you evaluate the forward potential of that, not just signups on day one. And, you know, that kind of set the stage for where we are now, because despite sort of the prioritization schedule that Fish and Wildlife had laid out for the prairie chicken, because of that litigation pressure, within months of the court striking down that listing, they were back in doing a status review and going through this process to list again. And they made no bones about the fact that that was a decision based on pressure and the fact that they knew they'd get sued. So, you know, we're hopeful that this Western governor's process is going to help fix some of that and make this process work better, put the states in the driver's seat on recovery make sure that they have an equal seat at the table with the federal government in recovering these species, and also waving that flag when it's time to delist them. Because right now, that is a petition process that has its own problems and litigation and drawbacks. And anyone in gray wolf country can tell you that is a battle they've been fighting for years, despite the fact that that species was delisted through a regular process back in 2011 and 12. Here we sit in 2018 with the wolf still protected, 4,000, maybe more in the Great Lakes region, close to 1,000 more out west. So we know this process is broken. We're hopeful that we'll see something out of the committee that moves us in the right direction. And we're hopeful that those moderate environmental groups, the ones that focus on working landscapes, that say they see a real benefit in what we do, we're hopeful they'll meet us at the table and be true to their word and hold up their end of this deal. We certainly have. You know, you don't see me going around the country burning huts and saying we need to gut the Endangered Species Act. What we're saying is, gosh, it's a partisan issue, but we think there's a bipartisan solution to get to a good spot. At the same time that that's happening, we have the administration working on their own rulemaking on this issue. We have three rules sitting at the White House right now at OIRA, the Office of Management and Budget, waiting for review and release to the public. One of those rules deals with the 4D rule under the Endangered Species Act. And essentially what the 4D, it's called a blanket 4D. What that does is it says, even though you have a threatened category and an endangered category, it sort of defaults to that endangered status protection for threatened species. So in the case of the lesser prairie chicken, we're going to list as threatened, but we're going to basically put all the restrictions of an endangered listing, which required Fish and Wildlife, for people who remember this, to go back and say, yeah, we're listing as threatened, but we're going to do a 4D exemption. And we're going to carve out all these areas for incidental take to make sure people aren't inappropriately impacted. Well, that's not a great way to do business. And we'd rather see a situation, and this is the rulemaking that we're seeing at the White House now, where they say, okay, you got a threatened listing, not an endangered. It didn't quite rate an endangered listing. Let's start at zero and let's build in whatever protections we need. Or maybe we don't need any at this time. Maybe we're just putting it on this list because we want to make sure we're keeping an eye on it. Give them the flexibility to use the law the way it was intended, rather than the way the Center for Biological Diversity or anybody else would like them to use it. So we're looking at that. And there are two other rules that we haven't seen yet. One having to do with critical habitat and one having to do with the consultation process under Section 7, both of which would be huge wins for our industry as far as flexibility to make sure the ESA works properly.
You talk about a lot of different issues there. One that kind of, I think, continues to be talked about, is there conversations on the economic impacts of these decisions as well? Has that been brought into the Western governor's conversation?
You know, not directly. People get a little skittish about economic impact as it relates to the listing and delisting of species. We think it should be a central discussion point in evaluating a species because, you know, as emotional as these issues can be, the reality is there is a cost-benefit analysis to be done when you're looking at some of these species. Is the juice worth the squeeze, so to speak, to shut down an industry in a particular area of the country to save a weed or a snail or, you know, any one of these species? You know, we know what our friends in the environmental community will say. They will make the argument every time that this is the keystone. And, you know, if this snail darter dies out in these three counties, man, that's the domino that starts the whole chain. And the next thing you know, we're going to see bald eagles dropping out of the sky. And we know that's not true. So, you know, I mean, it's a situation where we'd like to see them pay a little more attention to that. But if we can just get the process itself to work better, if we can make it work the way it's intended to, and we can get that state voice back into the process, we're confident that sort of impact to local communities aspect will be more represented in the process than it is now. So it's not attacking it directly, but it's sort of, you know, getting that same voice in the table by another means.
Finally, as you talk to producers at this point, is there anything they need to be doing, or is it a sit and wait and see?
So, you know, I've been a broken record on this, and we have a lot of friends in Congress that want to help on this issue. And it's one of those things where you can't, this is my dad would say when I was growing up, you can't swing a dead cat in Congress without hitting somebody with an ESA bill. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. Everybody has over the years talked to constituents from their district and said, man, I'm going to solve this thing. And this is my bill to do it. All of those have merit. All of those are well-intentioned, and we are so pleased that so many members of Congress want to attack this issue. The thing that producers can do to help us is to keep a consistent message headed to their delegations and to their members that, hey, we appreciate everything you're doing, but there's a larger debate at play here. We can get a lot of things done in the House that we can't get done in the Senate, and we've got to have an eye towards that 60-vote threshold that sort of haunts everything we do here in Washington. And given the kind of partisan, polarizing time that we're in, that's going to probably get worse, not better. So, you know, it's not that we don't love some of those other solutions. It's just that we've got our eyes on the one we think has legs and can get to 60. So, you know, getting that message back to some of their districts and say, we love your bill too, but man, we really want to see you support this bipartisan effort because we think it's going to get us where we need to be. That's a critical message for our friends to hear right now from back home, that they're not going to get hung out to dry if they come to the table and deal on this deal. Because, you know, I think there's a lot of concern sometimes that, man, if I don't stay far enough out to the right, I'm going to get slaughtered back home. They need to hear from the country that we get it. We get that there's a big lift here, and we got you. We're on the same page, and we know that this is going to need to be a bipartisan deal to really work.
Where can we find out more information? You have it up on the website?
Absolutely. NCBA.org, publiclandscouncil.org, both are great places to find information on this. You know, there's a lot more detail, obviously, than what we can cover in short order here. But you can also go to the Western Governor's website, to their ESA initiative, and that'll outline those recommendations. I think what you'll see, hopefully, fingers crossed, in a bill here soon, will be really reflective of that process.
Great to see you. Best of luck.
Great seeing you.
Ethan Lane, Executive Director, Public Lands Council, NCBA Federal Lands in Washington, D.C. It's the Agribusiness Report.